Well, hello everyone. Welcome to this book guide on Julius Evola. If you found this video, I assume you know who he is already. People have asked me to invest in a whiteboard, so I now have a whiteboard. And what I'm going to do, I've got all of Evola's books here, and I've separated them into five different categories. So you've got the number one, the essential Evola, two, what I have described as the accessible Eveler, because he's quite an impenetrable thinker. Third, we've got the Western esoteric Eveler. Then we've got the Eastern spiritual explorations, which I'll get into. And finally, a special bracket of stuff which you can generally call engagements with Italy and Germany in the 30s and 40s and the regimes that were in power there and his critiques of them, etc., etc. So I'm going to get to all of that. I've got all of the books here, which I'm going to get into. But before we get going, Christmas is coming up. You should pick up a course at the Academic Agency. Trivium, the bestseller there. I'm going to play the ad. Do buy it now. Christmas is a very good time to get it because you've got a lot of time. Most people have time off. Good time to do a course on logic and grammar and rhetoric. So buy it now, and when I come back, we're going to be looking at all of Evola's books, and I'm going to suggest an order that you can approach them in, etc.
Academic Agency.
All right, so as I was saying, you have the essential Evola, the accessible Evola, the Western, Eastern, and the engagements with Italy and Germany in the kind of fascist and National Socialist periods. So let's start with the essential Evola, shall we? I would say that pretty much all of his thought can be found in these five books here, starting with, and generally speaking, they each do different things. Arguably, I could probably throw in pagan imperialism into the mix here, which is a kind of, where would we put it? We'd put it here. Before revolt. So these books, Pagan Imperialism, Revolt Against the Modern World, The Mystery of the Grail, Eros and the Mysteries of Love, Men Among the Ruins, and Ride the Tiger, I would say represent the absolute core of the Evola corpus. Okay, he's got lots of other books, but the absolute core of his ideas can be found here. Let's go through them a little bit, okay? So the core of his metaphysics is this book here, Revolt Against the Modern World. It is quite a difficult read, especially if you've never read anything like it before. I remember I read it. I tried to get into it several times back in the day, and I just bounced straight off it. I didn't understand what on earth he was talking about. So for very reasons, I suggest not actually diving in. It's the book he's most famous for, but I would suggest not diving in with that one first because it's quite hard to get your head around if you've never approached anything like Evola or the world of perennial traditionalism before. Anyway, let's go through the essential works here. So I would say his metaphysics is in this book here, Revolt Against the Modern World. I also think a supplement to that, The Mystery of the Grail, is quite important because it contains his longest meditation on the Guelphs and the Ghibellines and why he sides with the emperor over the pope and things like that, and some of his thoughts on Christianity in that book there. And also Eros and the Mysteries of Love. I actually found Revolt Against the Modern World easier to understand once I'd understand Eros and the Mysteries of Love, which is about gender. It's about the solar masculine versus the lunar feminine, what the man of tradition and the woman of tradition would look like. And it's, I think, a brilliant exposition to get your orientation, especially in the modern world where, you know, as Damon Alma once sang, girls want to be boys and boys want to be girls and all the rest of it. There's a lot of confusion around. And Eros and the Mysteries of Love, I think, gives a good kind of compass as to what masculinity and femininity are. And also how you can, you know, you can actually like be a man and be spiritually a woman, or be a woman and be spiritually a man. and it goes into a lot of that sort of stuff too. I would say if Revolt Against the Modern World is his metaphysics, then his ethics is Ride the Tiger, and his politics is Men Among the Ruins. And the reason I've got pagan imperialism here is because you can kind of divide Evola's career into the period where Mussolini was in power in Italy. Obviously, Evola was an Italian writer, and he was at various times critiquing or trying to influence the fascist regime to kind of be more traditionalist and to be more pagan imperialist, okay? And then after the war, where he thinks all is lost, basically, and there's nothing, after World War II, that is, and he says, well, look, that's this prognosis when he was a young man of pagan imperialism, that's not going to happen now, because the forces of anti-tradition won the war, essentially. And so what to do now in, it's called Post-War Reflections of a Radical Traditionalist, what should the man of tradition to do now when basically hope of a political solution is lost in the post-war world, okay? So there's a bit of a before and after here. In this book, this is more like his kind of positive vision, if that makes any sense. All things being ideal, what things might look like. And he's a kind of young and a bit full of piss and vinegar here. Whereas in this book, he's older, he's more reflective, he's being much more realistic. You could say, obviously, the reality of the Axis powers losing the war as well. So, Men Among the Ruins is his kind of final word on politics. And then Ride the Tiger, as I mentioned, is his ethics, i.e. how should you carry yourself, a survival manual for the aristocrats of the soul. So that's basically the core of Evola. If you understand those books, if you read and understand those books that I just shared, these ones, you've basically got the gist of all of the rest of Evola, okay? So the rest of his works can be seen as elaborations, okay? Let's break it down. The Western esoteric and the Eastern spiritual stuff can be seen really as guides to how to achieve what he talks about in Ride the Tiger. He's always talking about, finding an inner peace, finding an inner, you know, reaching transcendence. Well, how do you do that? People devote all sorts of your lifetime worth of study to such a thing, East and West. And all of those sorts of explorations of Evola's are his lifelong quest, you know, to try to, achieve transcendence or to, live as the man of tradition. He talks about distinction, becoming a man of distinction and excellence. But all of these things require discipline, and they require various different practices. So when he was a younger man, he turned to Western esotericism. There's a very large book here called Introduction to Magic. Okay. He also wrote around this same sort of time the Hermetic tradition. And, I mean, first of all, you know, the word magic, he was known at some point in his life as the Magic Baron, as a kind of nickname. The word magic should probably come with a few scare quotes. Probably the best way to think about magic, you know, in this sort of context, is basically as kind of like the yoga of the West. Okay, the yoga of the West. You know, people don't tend to call Eastern religions quote-unquote magic, but over for whatever reason, in the West, these sorts of practices, these sorts of techniques, meditations and so on, acquired the phrase magic, okay? And if you think about it, like, you've all seen or you've all heard of, you know, let's say the yogi who achieves such mastery of mind over matter that he's able to, I don't know, lie on a bed of nails or something, or, you know, he's able to, you know, touch fire and not be affected by it, so things like this. So if you think about it from a certain point of view, it's kind of magic, but not in that, like, obviously the word magic has taken on all sorts of other meanings. You know, now you'd think of, like, Gandalf or Dungeons and Dragons, or, but, you know, even like Paul Daniels and a magician in that sense. Magic in this sense is not, it basically just means a kind of spiritual path in much the same way that a Buddhist is trying to reach nirvana, or, you know, the yogis are trying to reach enlightenment, etc. Okay? Or in Japan, it's Zen, right? That when the word magic is used, you have to kind of think of it in that way. Not in the sense of like doing fireballs and magic missile. Okay, so that's one thing. And he was involved with this group. And I have to say, like, my understanding of these things, to the extent that I have understandings of them, you know, what any explorations I've done in Western esotericism, even by those standards, Evola and his friends here, I mean, it's unlike the other stuff I've read on this, okay? It's not, like, it's called the Hermetic tradition, but this book, like, does not resemble anything else I've read on this. This seems to be like a full, like a study on alchemical principles from medieval alchemy, something like this, with a few Hermetic principles thrown in. This book has got like multiple authors and is all over the place. So, if you're interested in Western esotericism, even if you're kind of quite into it, I would say that these are for really quite advanced study only. So, in your Evola explorations, I would leave that stuff possibly till last. You know, if you read it at all, I would say. On the Eastern front, he has got several other books that are of interest. There is the Doctrine of the Awakening. There is the this book that was put out by one press called East and West, which has got some essays in it. There's the Yoga of Power, which I think was the first Evola book that was translated into English. There's this book called The Fall of Spirituality, which has got a much cooler title, The Mask and the Face of Western Spirituality, or something like that. I much prefer that alternative title, and the cover. This cover, this is my least favourite of all the Evola covers, but this is an interesting book as well. And also influential on me for a certain period was this little pamphlet he did on Taoism. I can't remember exactly where there's one on Zen. I couldn't find it here. It's a little thin booklet, but these are basically like Evola's explorations in all of the different kind of systems, initiatic, religious orders, etc., etc. And he goes through them and he critiques, like in this one, he looks at lots of the currents that are around, like, you know, Madame Blavatsky and all that sort of stuff, and New Ageism and all this sort of stuff. And as you can imagine, Evola is quite critical of a lot of these, you know, a lot of these kind of hippy-dippy type things. You know, he's not totally dismissive of Blavatsky, for example, but he has his critiques here and there. Again, all of these things, I would say, are only going to be useful if you're actually going to practice, if you're actually going to get into this, if you're actually going to get into Eastern spirituality. And they are, in my opinion, only applicable to practitioners, people who actually want to get into this stuff, whether it's the Western stuff or the Eastern stuff. Now, as a perennialist, Evola would argue that there's not actually that much difference between them. Whether you're doing Buddhism, whether you're doing yoga, whether you're doing Zen, whether you're doing magic, high magic, whatever you call it, it's all the same stuff, according to, you know, a certain way of perennialist thinking. Although they do say, in the end, you have to pick one. And it's never clear if Evola actually ever did pick one. I do have a book here called Evola, the Sufi of Rome, written by one of his kind of students. I actually met the author of that book once, which claims that he secretly became a Sufi. Obviously no evidence for that in any of his actual writings, but he claims he became a Sufi at one point. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. He doesn't actually talk about Sufism in any of his works. So as far as I can see, he was most interested in yoga, as far as I can see. I've gone through those books, and, you know, there's a lot of stuff about, like, breathe through one nostril and, you know, all of these different kind of rituals and things. It's really only if you're going to get into that sort of stuff, okay? There's a whole bracket I've called the accessible Evola, okay? And this is probably much more for you if you want to truly understand the ideas in the essential Evola stuff. And these are the various collections that have been put out over the years. So there's a Handbook for Right-Wing Youth, Metaphysics of Power, Metaphysics of War, Recognitions, and the Bow and the Club. Okay? And for my money, these are actually the best place to start with Evola. Maybe I should have said that earlier on. When people ask me, where should you start with Evola, I always come back to an essay called Orientations, which I think is at the start of this book here, Recognitions. Is it in the start of this? In the start of one of these books. No. Where's Orientations? Maybe it's in the Metaphysics of Power. It's in one of these books. There you go, it's at the start of the Handbook for Right-Wing Youth. Orientations, 11 points. That's the essay. I'm sure it's in one of these other ones as well. I think it's in Recognitions. Just couldn't see it. Recognitions. Anyway, Orientations, 11 points, is at the start of this book here, which is a good general introduction to his thought. And generally, and I've said this before on previous videos on Evola, I find the essays in The Bow in the Club and the essays in some of these other books as well, like Recognitions and Metaphysics of Power, more accessible. This one, Metaphysics of War, is a good book on heroism and warfare and things like that, and what heroic warfare might look like. One of the kind of themes that haunted a lot of men of this era, Ernst Jünger and people like that, was that modern warfare is not heroic. That the warfare in World War One, you know, trench warfare and so on, was not heroic in the same sense that war used to be. And this book metaphysics of war is all sorts of different essays on the nature of the heroic. Okay, one of the things that you'll come across is that Evola is always on the side of trying to achieve mastery. He sees, you know, the kind of solar masculine principle as one of looking towards mastery. You know, it's funny, I was off last week, as people know, and I started watching videos by Marco Pierre White. This is a kind of weird digression. But you watch a few videos by Marco Pierre White, who's a chef, who's a famous chef, and you can kind of immediately recognize what he's talking about, the solar masculine principle, right? Like the striving for perfection and mastery through dedication to a craft. Like, he loves that idea. He's also very strong on things like student-mentor relationships and things like that. So, yeah, and there's a lot of interesting essays in these books on all sorts of weird topics. Like, he talks about the beats of... Like, you forget that Evola lived until 1974. So he's got stuff to say about the Beatles and about jazz and the beat movement and psychoanalysis. And one of my favourite Evola essays in this book, The Bow in the Club, which I, you know, this one called Negrified America, which is a little bit on the spicy side, it must be admitted. But it's a very interesting kind of meditation on what modern America is and what it's become. Many other, like this book here, Metaphysics of Power, this essay, The Two Faces of Nationalism, this one here, The Two Faces of Liberalism. These are like, there's a lot of just good one-shot explanations of different things in these books, which I return to this essay on the considerations on divorce. For example, like, Evola does not give the answer that you'd expect a lot of the time, because from his point of view, things are already pretty far gone. Things are already fallen. So he, like, in that essay, he's like, well, what does modern marriage mean? What does it even mean? You know, so when you're talking about marriage and divorce, were you even married in the first place, he would argue. There's stuff on Montessori schools. In this one here. I mean, I really like these collections. And if you were just kind of like into Evola for the politics, not for the spiritual stuff, you could honestly like skip all of the books in these two categories. Now, I've got friends who are Evolians, like Cat, Philosophy Cat, and the editors of these books, John Morgan, I interviewed him once, and they'd probably have their head in their hands. They'd be like, you can't understand Evola unless you understand the yoga of power. You know, you can't really understand what he's talking about unless you truly understand his esoteric spiritual writings. Okay, that is true. But realistically, lots of people watching this are going to be into Evola for the politics, for the like, those books are good if you're on a spirit on your if you're on a path towards spiritual enlightenment, or if you're seeking transcendence, or if you're seeking to become the aristocrat of the soul, okay? Whereas if you're thinking like, if you're trying to get an orientation, if you're feeling lost in the modern world, if you want to understand why we feel like so much in the shit, these books here, these essays in these books here will probably speak more directly to you and be a gateway into his deeper, like his core works, the ones I mentioned at the start, and those more spiritually leaning ones, should you be so inclined. Okay, I know people who read Evola and rejected, for example, his critique of Catholicism. He's always critical of Christianity. He thinks he predicts in Man Among the Ruins, for example, that the Catholic Church has lost its way to the extent that it is destined to make a progressive leftist turn. Okay, he wrote this book in 1953. He has been fully vindicated in, you know, I mean, he basically says, look, over time, the Catholic Church will become communist. Okay, it will embrace communist ideas. And basically, he was right. I mean, he was right. Look at the recent popes. So, I have always been convinced by Evola's critiques of Christianity. But I know people who've read Evola, who've understood the core of his works, who've engaged deeply with the spiritual material and so on, and still said, no, I think the right thing to do is to become a Catholic, or the right thing to do is to, you know, go further into Christianity. And those people exist. Those people exist. You know, you don't have to follow any of these paths. But, yes, my basic point is that I think you can read some of this stuff without getting into all of that, without, you know, becoming a Christian or something. Evola probably would say, yeah, you're missing the point, though. You really should be getting into that, because that's the truth. That's the one way. That's the absolute, you know. Whereas I'm just being the realist, I know that lots of people watching this will never do that, but will still get something from these works here. Okay? And that just leaves the fifth and final section of books here, and there's quite a few of them. Oh, I should mention before I get to them, there is The Path of Cinnabar, which is a kind of autobiography, but it's not an autobiography because he doesn't really talk about his life at all. There's no like, oh, I grew up in this little town in Italy and, you know, I went to school here. In typical Evola fashion, he just steps over all of that. And what he really does is he provides an intellectual guide to all his own work. So this really is like a kind of skeleton key guide to all of his work. Okay, he explains his influences. He explains what he was thinking when he was writing some of these books. He explains some of the contradictions between them. And that is really what Path of Cinnabar is. I found, as somebody who's published in Evola, I wrote a guide for Chronicles, you know, Remembering the Right. I wrote the Evola article for them. I have a chapter on Evola in this book here, Prophets of Doom. Prophets of Doom. Okay, there's Evola. There. So I've got a chapter. So I've published on Evola myself, and I found The Path of Cinnabar was very useful to get a kind of map, to build up a picture of how all these different books relate to each other. Okay, and as I said, if you get these core ones, all the others are elaborations on these core books here. Okay, that really, all of the books are just an elaboration on this one book, Revolt Against. That's the absolute center of the web. Okay, but like I said, I could only truly understand Revolt after I'd read Eros and the Mysteries and the Metaphysics of Sex. Okay, and you know, all sorts of people will find different things in the work of Evola. And I've got a buddy, Carl Benjamin. I don't think Carl's particularly religious. I don't know. He famously used to be an atheist, okay? But I seem to remember him engaging quite well with the ideas of Evola in this book here. And he got it. As somebody who's written on feminism, as somebody who's, you know, a father, as somebody who thinks about the relationship between the sexes and so on, he got it. He got it straight away. And he's not really a person you'd expect to kind of get Evola, but he did, because it spoke to perennial truths, and that is one of the things that makes him a good writer. It makes him somebody worth reading, is because he speaks to perennial truths. Okay, now let's get on to this final section then, his engagements with basically fascist Italy and National Socialist Germany. And there's quite a few books in this category. Some of them are pretty hard to get hold of as well. Namely this one here. Kind of a rare copy of Synthesis of the Doctrine of Race, which for some reason his normal publishers, which are Arctos and Inner Traditions, won't touch that book. I kind of have an idea why. There's one chapter in there in particular. that I think is the reason. But why don't we talk about these then? So just to explain, Evola was writing for first half of his career under Mussolini in Italy. And Mussolini did actually read Evola. Mussolini had several times commented on Evola's writing. This book, Pagan Imperialism, caused a controversy because he was being very critical of the Catholic Church, and he wanted Mussolini's Italy to go a kind of more pagan Roman route. And he's saying, look, the Catholic Church is going to be cucky, and it's not going to be able to follow this path, basically, due to the, you know, the fact that the church has been corrupted in Evola's view. And it caused a controversy with Catholics in Italy, as you can imagine, in 1928. And Mussolini actually intervened in that whole debate and said he wasn't angry. He was not angry with Evola and understood perfectly well what he was trying to say in this book. But as the leader of Italy, he has to kind of, you know, be the leader of Italy. And obviously Italy's a Catholic country. So that's interesting. And at several times in his career, Mussolini comments on various things that Evola has written. Clearly, he's somebody who, he wasn't like influential in, he didn't like affect policy that much, or he didn't, you know, he wasn't a fascist in that sense. He's very critical of fascism, as we'll just see. But he was certainly an intellectual who was living in Italy during that time. And so he was, and Mussolini fancied himself as somebody who read. And so, like, for example, Mussolini also read Pareto, one of the elite theorists. So, yeah, that's an interesting kind of sidebar. Two of the books that Mussolini did talk about were these ones, The Myth of the Blood, which is the genesis of racialism, and The Synthesis of the Doctrine of Race. And in these books, Evola is critical of the fascists and the Nazis of the period who are obsessed with scientific racism. They're obsessed with, you know, measuring skulls and, you know, a scientism, a kind of purely biological, materialist examination of race as a phenomenon. What Evola says in these books is like, look, this is kind of a superstitious and silly way of thinking about race. You know, not least because, especially at that time, the science wasn't all that, okay? Also, there's all sorts of contradictions. But in his view, in Evola's view, biology is not going to get you there. Biology alone is not going to do shit. It's just like, he basically at one point says, like, you might as well be a Marxist. If you're going to go this route, you might as well become a materialist Marxist because, you know, you're basically putting biology above all other considerations. He argues that you cannot have a conception of race without a spiritual conception of race. And obviously, when by spiritual, he's talking about attitudes, he's talking about behaviours, he's talking about values, he's talking about the way you carry yourself. You know, and not in a kind of exoteric sense, but in a kind of deep, meaningful sense. And he therefore comes to some conclusions you don't maybe expect of him. Like, for example, when he talks about Judaism and he talks about the Jewish people, he says, well, look, one of their issues is that they're always separated. They haven't had a homeland, so they're separated from nation, they're separated from state, they're separated from homeland. So everywhere they go, they are a diaspora who are looking to, you know, revolt against whatever the current order is. Therefore, you know, in a strange way, Evola ends up being a kind of Zionist by saying, well, look, this problem would probably start to go away if they had their own homeland, as an example, okay? But there's also other surprising aspects to this way of thinking about race, because if there is a spiritual aspect to it, it also means that people can spiritually start to embody other races. This is also implicit in that essay I mentioned, negrified America where it doesn't actually matter if you're, not to sound like Michael, this is a kind of like racist Michael Jackson point, I guess. It doesn't matter if you're black or white, right? But what Avila is saying is that you could be a white man but embody the spirit of black people, okay? Or in the case of, like, for example, when he's talking about the Jewish people, you could become spiritually Jewish by embodying their kind of mode of being, if that makes any sense, okay? And he argues that if there's going to be a revival of the West, if there's going to be a new renaissance, a new golden age in the West, that the like focusing on things like blood and race and biology and so on is not going to get you there. You need the heroic. You need, you know, I mean, in these books, considering when he's written, he's talking about the Aryan man, okay? But he doesn't mean it in the sense that those terms have come to, you know, the baggage that's come with all of that now. What he's talking about there is a type of heroic spirit, a type of embodied differentiated man, I guess you'd put it that way. And that is not purely a matter of biology, okay? You can very easily have the right sort of blood and the wrong sort of spirit, is what he's saying, okay? The blood is not going to get you there. The spirit is. Interesting argument. And Mussolini, for what it was worth, liked that argument. He actually was sympathetic to that. And a lot of it, of course, is in contrast with some of the German racist ideas at that time. You know, Hitler's Germany. Speaking of which, he also had quite a bit to say about Hitler's Germany in this book, Notes on the Third Reich. There's also Fascism View from the Right, which is more on Italy, and A Traditionalist Confronts Fascism, which is a collection of essays where he looks at Mussolini's Italy and Hitler's Germany, and he has all sorts of kind of critiques of those regimes for being populist, for being materialist, for, you know, disregarding the spiritual, for being modernist in orientation, for being plebeian and democratic and so on and so forth. But I would argue that in the Avila corpus, these five books here, while they're interesting, are less essential unless you're kind of interested in Avila's views on these things, or if you're interested in some of the debates that were going on within Italy and within Germany at this time, which could be of academic interest or scholarly interest or whatever. I will say this book does have quite an entertaining section. I just know some people will be amused by this. It's got a whole section where it looks at different people, and this is kind of a look at his solar nose and things like that. So there's a bit of that sort of thing where he goes through in tedious detail different kind of archetypes, different racial types that exist in Italy, and dishonest forehead, dishonest chin, honest, regal-looking chap, etc. And genuinely, he is interested in things like, you know, what do we see if we look at the old Roman statues and things like that? To me, this sort of stuff, while it's interesting, is a kind of, I would put these books as kind of innocent, like they're less essential, in my view, to Avila's overall worldview. And interestingly, after the Second World War, he never really returns to this stuff. I get the impression that this kind of race stuff was his attempt to try to engage with some of the kind of some of the debates that were going on at his time, you know, a bid for relevance within Italy and so on, they're less essential, because later on he doesn't really return to those ideas that much. And yeah, there it is. Okay, been going for 40 minutes. Hopefully this will be of use. People keep on asking me to do it. If people like this, maybe I'll do one on Carlyle soon. All of these are Carlyle books, and Carlyle's a bit difficult to, because he didn't really write, he did write books, but a lot of his stuff is individual essays and things like that. But yes, hopefully this was useful to you. Let me know if you're an Evola person. Let me know if you think I forgot anything. Pick up a course at the academic agency. If you're wondering how I know all of this stuff, Foundations of Research is a good one. Trivium also. I would get those two together. Get the Trivium and Research, and that will do you well over Christmas. Or Foundations of Shakespeare, many other great courses, and I'll see you next time.
If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.